They had to fight the ship to keep it above the surface.
The search for missing U.S. Navy crew called off after collision. It's Monday, June 19th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We invite you to join us online at VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, political tensions rise between Australia and China. China cracks down on the financial industry. Surviving summer Ramadan fasts, animals in living color, computer viruses on film. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The U.S. Navy has called off its search for seven missing sailors after finding bodies in the sleeping compartments of the USS Fitzgerald, the Navy destroyer that collided with a massive Philippine merchant vessel about four times its size off the coast of Japan early Saturday. There was no immediate explanation for the collision, and such collisions between two ships are rare. The U.S. Navy says divers were able to access a flooded berthing compartment on the Fitzgerald and found a number of the sailors. None were alive. It's not clear how many bodies were recovered. U.S. 7th Fleet Commander Vice Admiral Joseph P. O'Coyne.
We do have watch teams that are awake throughout the night, but a significant part of the crew was sleeping. And as I said before, two compartments that house 116 of the crew are in those compartments, and it was a significant impact to the side of the ship.
O'Coyne said the Navy will launch an investigation into the collision because, quote, we owe it to our families and the Navy to understand what happened. He said seawater gushed into sleeping compartments and that part of the ship's right side was caved in.
The damage is mostly underneath the waterline, and it's a large gash near the keel of the ship. And so the water flow was tremendous. And so there wasn't a lot of time in those spaces that were open to the sea. And as you can see now, the ship is still listing. And so they had to fight the ship to keep it above the surface.
Three other U.S. crew members were injured in the accident, including the vessel's commanding officer, Bryce Benson, with all of them undergoing treatment. O'Coyne said without elaborating that Benson is, quote, lucky to be alive. It's not clear how many others may have been injured in the crash, which occurred about 100 kilometers southwest of Yokosuka at about 2:30 a.m. Saturday local time. At that time, many of the 200 sailors aboard the USS Fitzgerald would have been sleeping in their berths. The Fitzgerald returned to Yokosuka. The merchant vessel, ACX Crystal, sailed into Tokyo on Saturday afternoon with minor damage to its bow. None of the 20-member crew in the Philippine-flagged container ship was reported injured. O'Coyne said the Fitzgerald is salvageable, but that repairs will likely take months. Meanwhile, Washington is preparing for the arrival next week of Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi, who makes his first visit to the White House since President Donald Trump's inauguration. Sean Spicer is the president's spokesman.
He looks forward to discussing the ways to strengthen our ties between the United States and India and advancing our common priorities, fighting terrorism, promoting economic growth and reforms, and expanding security cooperation in the Indo-Pacific region. The two leaders will look to outline a common vision for the U.S.-India partnership that's worthy of India's 1.6 billion citizens.
Spicer said trade with India has grown sixfold since 2000, from $19 billion a year to $115 billion last year. He said U.S. business is helping to build Mr. Modi's vision of a new India while creating thousands of U.S. jobs. RAND Corporation analyst Rafiq Dosani tells VOA's Victor Beatty Mr. Modi wanted the visit to take place soon after China's leader met with Mr. Trump in early April.
I think Mr. Modi was keen to be on the early list of world leaders visiting Trump, particularly after the Xi Jinping visit. In that time, you know, certain events have taken place that make the trip more interesting. It's not just going to be that everything is agreeable and that the relations are in great shape. There are some points of contention now.
Under Barack Obama, the two countries seemed to draw close together. But with Mr. Trump in office, focusing on China and the concerns about North Korea, have relations drifted?
I think under Barack Obama, relations improved. I think the one big area that was not fulfilled during George Bush's time as president was in the defense agreements. America was keen to sell fair amount of arms to India, but there were issues such as technology agreements as well as India's willingness to buy large quantities. And those things have been resolved, and India is now a big client of American defense hardware. So that's been a big point for the U.S. in sort of cementing relations. With Trump, I don't see that declining. In fact, if he studies the numbers, he'll see that India is one of his largest clients for military hardware. And that's important for him from the point of view of building American manufacturing. The bigger issue is that Mr. Trump has, for the moment at least, decided to give China a chance. So whereas he treated China as almost like a significant adversary, if not an enemy, in his campaign, since then, President Xi has visited. The two leaders have apparently agreed to work together in a number of areas, starting with the very dangerous situation in North Korea. So from that point of view, there's been some thawing of relations, at least from where Mr. Trump started and what it is now. My own sense is I don't think Mr. Modi is too concerned about that. This is more about cementing sort of deeper ties with the U.S. based on other relationships, economic relationships, soft power, trade, and those are the things he'd be looking to bolster.
Rafiq Dosani said the Indian Prime Minister hopes the visit will reaffirm a growing strategic partnership that spans three presidents. He said the United States is India's top foreign policy priority, and Mr. Modi hopes to make that relationship more sustainable across a spectrum of challenges, including counterterrorism, China and Pakistan, as well as bilateral security and economic interests. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on VOANews.com. Missing USS Fitzgerald sailors found dead. Navy won't yet say how many. Pakistani diplomats go missing in eastern Afghanistan. Anwar Ibrahim, jailed Malaysian opposition leader, withdraws as prime minister candidate. Abe popularity sinks amid suspicions he abused authority. Saving Bunyong of vulnerable language in Cambodia. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories, and there's a whole lot more if you visit our Facebook page at VOA Asia and also check out the VOANews.com website. VOA Asia continues. China's ambassador in Canberra has accused the media of creating a panic over Beijing's influence in Australia. In a speech, Chinese Ambassador Cheng Jingye labeled a story broadcast by Australia's ABC News as fabricated and politically motivated. We hear details from Phil Mercer in Sydney.
The Australian Broadcasting Corporation has alleged two Chinese businessmen who donated money to three of Australia's major political parties have links to the Chinese Communist Party. The ABC documentary aired earlier this month and claimed to uncover how China's Communist Party was secretly infiltrating Australia. The programme said Australia's main intelligence agency had warned that espionage and foreign interference are occurring here on an unprecedented scale, with the potential to cause serious harm to this nation's sovereignty, its security, and our political system. The story prompted other reports into suspected ties between Australian politicians and financial donors from China. The allegations have infuriated China's ambassador to Australia, Cheng Jingye, who accused media organisations of having wild and morbid imaginations. Speaking at an Australia-China Business Council meeting at Parliament House in Canberra, Cheng said the claims were groundless.
In Chinese, we call it cook up the overnight cold rice, which means repeating the same old stuff again and again. Maybe the producers of the program believe that those groundless allegations may turn to be truths after repeating 1,000 times. Their main purpose, as I see it, is to instigate China panic.
In the audience for Ambassador Cheng's uncompromising speech was Australian Foreign Minister Julie Bishop, who'd earlier this week been questioned by opposition lawmakers over Chinese donors to the governing Liberal Party. Bishop, however, made no reference to the controversy in her address, focusing instead on growing social and economic links between the two nations. China is Australia's biggest trading partner, and commercial ties between the two nations grow deeper every day. China's appetite for resources, most notably iron ore and coal, helped Australia avoid the worst of the global financial crisis. Analysts believe that as the mining boom fades, Australia's future prosperity depends on Chinese demand for its education and tourism services, as well as manufacturing and agricultural products. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
They had to fight the ship to keep it above the surface.
Happening now in Asia, Pakistan cricket fans are celebrating a 180-run victory over India, as their team claims the ICC Champions Trophy in London. Title holder India needed 339 to win, but collapsed after Pakistani fast bowler Mohammad Amir removed the top three batsmen. India dismissed for 158 with 19.3 overs to spare. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. China's recent detention of Hu Xiaohui, head of the massive insurance conglomerate Anbang Insurance Group, is seen by some as a crucial turning point in Chinese President Xi Jinping's crackdown on wealthy, corrupt business people, or, quote, big crocodiles, as they're called in China. But that turning point is not without its risks, as analysts note, given that Wu is said to have powerful political backers and millions of policyholders. Until recently, Anbang Insurance Group was on a global buying spree. The company claims to have nearly $300 billion in assets and was behind some of China's most high-profile overseas acquisitions in recent years, including the purchase of the Waldorf Astoria Hotel in New York City. It also tried to buy Starwood Hotels, has ties on Wall Street, and has been linked to a potential deal involving U.S. President Donald Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner. The financial sector is considered the most corrupt sector of all, as it is highly monopolized by the state. Wu's detention, say analysts, could be part of a genuine effort to clean up the sector and send a message to others in the industry. According to the New York Times in its most recent financial disclosure, nearly three-fifths of Anbang's assets were overseas. Chinese regulations stipulate that insurers cannot put more than 15% of their assets overseas. Christopher Balding, a professor at Peking University's HSBC Business School, said while Anbang was at the very least pushing the boundaries of regulatory limits, so were other companies that were the same size.
I don't see anything that Anbang has done differently than anyone else that would warrant detention. And so that seems to raise the possibility that there are other factors at play besides strict business issues.
Some believe Wu's detention could be part of a larger political struggle. Wu doesn't necessarily belong to the so-called Red Second Generation, the children of China's revolutionary leaders. But through marriage, he is the grandson-in-law to late leader Deng Xiaoping. The two, however, were reportedly divorced recently. Political analysts say that he's also supported by another heavyweight backer, Zhang Xinghong, former vice president and right-hand man of Jiang Zemin. China's crackdown on big crocodiles has been gaining steam for more than 6 months, and one key development, said China leadership analyst Willie Lam, was the abduction of Xiao Jianhua from Hong Kong.
Xiao Jianhua was actually, he was a, what the Chinese call a white glove, Bai Shou Tao, a broker for powerful families. You know, Xiao Jianhua was apparently friendly with the Zhang Xinghong family. And it's well known that, you know, Xi Jinping is now in a power struggle with the Shanghai Bang, you know, including Jiang Zemin and Jiang Xinghong.
Political connections aside, the potential impact the handling of Anbang could have on the society is perhaps even more of a concern. Anbang is not just an insurance company, but it's a really massive wealth management company, and any mishandling of it brings risks.
The people who bought insurance from Anbang, I mean, these are not peasants or urban workers. I mean, most of them are middle-class family with some with college education. So it will be a big problem. They will definitely make a big noise, hold demonstrations.
Liu Xiqi, a professor of economics at Peking University, said that while it's still early to tell whether Wu may have manipulated capital markets or if his political backers were illegally involved in some way, if the situation doesn't get handled properly, the company's 35 million policyholders and share investors would take the first hit, Liu says. And the government may be further forced to step in with a bailout plan. That's a tab which would eventually be paid by taxpayers. VOA Beijing correspondent Bill Ide, along with Joyce Huang, sent us this story. We send them thanks. You're listening to VOA Asia.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
This news alert from VOA Asia, U.S. lawmakers, including from President Donald Trump's Republican Party, want a bigger role in short of boots on the ground in the southern Philippines. They fear the area is becoming a new hub for Islamist fighters from Southeast Asia and beyond. Fighting in Marawi has left more than 300 people dead. The latest news and features are on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. It's a challenge that many Muslims here in America are facing this year. Ramadan falls in the summer, and the fast can last between 16 and 20 hours a day. Ane Budianto tells us that one solution from Philadelphia, where those long hours drove psychiatrist Dr. Irman Posner to create a food supplement that helps curb hunger during Ramadan.
Dr. Imran Posner and his friend Farid Sanders established Fajr Foods, the company that produces the Ramadan bar, 2 years ago.
Our biggest concern and what we're hoping we can assist Muslims with is really of completing the fast. So both for people who were more reluctant to fast because of the pressures and the demands from their job, and then also just for people who are already currently fasting but still have some struggles and difficult periods with it.
The bar contains uncooked cornstarch, which takes a long time to digest, which make the fast easier and help people think clearly even though they haven't eaten in hours. Fajr Foods hold 4 patents for the Ramadan bar, which is available online. It is sold all year long, but the demand is highest a month before and during Ramadan. Anyone can use it as a meal substitute.
If you are extremely busy or things at work are extremely hectic during certain periods of time and it's just hard to grab a bite, then the Ramadan energy bar could be a helpful alternative during those times.
Currently, the Ramadan bar only comes in one flavor, chocolate. But Fajr Food says it will start producing other flavors soon. Ariadna Budianto, VOA News, Philadelphia.
Developing at this hour in Asia, search teams have retrieved the cockpit voice recorder and flight data recorder from a Myanmar Army plane that crashed into the Andaman Sea almost 2 weeks ago. The Chinese-made transport plane had 122 soldiers, family members, and crew on board. The cause of the crash remains unknown. VOA Asia Facebook has all the big stories every day. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, animal researchers have used a video game to better understand the differences between animals that could see a wide range of colors and those that are colorblind. VOA's Faith Lapidus reports after 30,000 volunteers played the game, the researchers got some surprising results.
There is a nightjar somewhere in this photo, but the bird is camouflaged, and you're looking through the eyes of a dichromat predator, which cannot see reds and greens. Humans are trichromats, and we see things a little differently.
A huge number of mammals are dichromats, but it doesn't take a huge evolutionary leap to develop this third color channel. So it's surprising that this hasn't happened more often in nature, suggesting there could be some advantage to being a dichromat.
To understand that advantage, Julian Troshenko and colleagues at the University of Exeter designed an online game called Where is That Nightjar?
So in this game, we used two models that are very well camouflaged. That's ground nesting nightjar birds and nests of ground nesting birds. They rely on their camouflage for their survival. So it's a really good natural system. They have predators in the wild who are both trichromats and dichromats. So we had photos of these, and we made these online games for people to play where they could try and find these things as fast as they could.
People could choose to play as a trichromat, like a monkey, or a dichromat, like a mongoose. Scientists assumed that dichromats, which are better at differentiating between light and shadow, would be better at finding camouflaged prey. But the trichromat competitors found the birds and their eggs faster, at first. Troshenko says as the game progressed, the dichromats improved faster and were performing equally well by the end of the game.
That shows that there's a huge element of learning, which has previously been largely ignored in the importance of camouflage. But if a predator in the wild is learning to try and find one type of prey, one type of camouflage faster than another, that can actually change the whole dynamics of an ecosystem where there's now a disadvantage to having a camouflage type that is easily learnt by predators over time.
In addition to providing insights into animal camouflage and vision, the study could also be of military interest, shedding light on the art of camouflaging soldiers and their equipment. I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
There's some great video with that. Check it out at voanews.com. The recent attack by the computer virus WannaCry infected more than 230,000 computers in over 150 countries. It's still not clear who's behind the ransomware, which affected all sorts of organizations. VOA's Penelope Palou tells us months before the attack, award-winning filmmaker Alex Gibney had released his documentary Zero Days, in which he warned of massive-scale cyber attacks and their devastating impact on our way of life.
Something as simple and innocuous as this becomes a challenge for all of us to maintain accountability control of our critical infrastructure systems.
Stuxnet is a computer virus the United States reportedly developed with Israel to infect and destroy Iran's nuclear centrifuges. Though the undercover operation was successful, the documentary asserts the virus was eventually discovered and fell into the hands of hackers who were able to enhance it and turn it against its creator. Zero Days director Alex Gibney tells VOA he uncovered that information with the help of insiders from the National Security Agency.
We sought a way for them to speak without their identities being revealed. And once we established the mechanism for that, they were more comfortable speaking a little bit more openly.
I was in NSA. I believe in the agency, so what I'm willing to give you will be limited. We have to understand these new weapons. The stakes are too high.
What do you mean?
We did Stuxnet. It's a fact. You know, we came so close to disaster, and we're still on the edge.
Stuxnet developed into such a powerful malware that it could cause physical destruction, such as shut down a large city's power grid, according to Eric Chin, Symantec's head of global cybersecurity.
It did open Pandora's box, and sort of that's where we are today. Now what we see is we see many likely nation states conducting attacks all over the world. We see staging so that potentially one day if they need to flip the switch, they could cause some additional sabotage to occur.
Gibney says cyber warfare has no borders or rules. It can strike anywhere, anyone, at any time.
People depend on trains. People depend on airplanes. People depend on their electricity. This is modern life. So what we're saying in this film is these weapons threaten modern life as we know it.
Although there is no apparent correlation between Stuxnet and the recent WannaCry malware, experts such as Eric Chen say cyber attacks follow similar patterns, remotely launched from undetected locations by unknown groups, perhaps by nation states, or mercenaries paid to sabotage and paralyze computer-dependent societies. Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. We thank you so much for joining us today. We'd like to say hello to all of our friends in the Philippines listening at DZUP 1602 AM radio at the University of the Philippines. We thank, too, our director Tracy Carter, engineer Aiden Utku, managing editor Diane Gao, Ali Ogden and David Bird are on our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson. We hope you have a wonderful day.